All right, Proverbs chapter 23. Proverbs chapter 23, the ongoing saga of a king preparing a prince to sit on a throne. And his desire is that when the young man takes the throne, he will be the king that, number one, God wants him to be. That, number two, will be a blessing to his nation. And number three, that will make his father happy that he raised him. And those are things that come out again and again and again as we read through here, as Solomon teaches his son. And in chapter 23, I want to talk to you about some warnings that he gives tonight concerning some individuals that it's easy to get caught up with. We are impressionable. Whether we like to admit it or not. And matter of fact, Sunday morning in Sunday school, we spent some time talking about selecting the people that will influence me. Somebody said, well, you ought to have an open mind. An open mind is like an open garbage can. You never know what people are going to throw in there. You ought to be one who is seeking wisdom, seeking understanding, but you ought to have some filters that will help filter out the things that you don't need in your life. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I compared what I believe the whole climate of Washington is. It's a room full of people. And in the middle of the room, there's a great, big, huge vessel filled with dollar bills. And when a fellow goes to Washington, his design is to be honest and forthright and to accomplish something. But when he gets there, he notices that everybody that strolls by just grabs a handful of bills and take it out the door. And you know, if you've been there 5 or 10 years, you start grabbing bills and it doesn't mean anything to you anymore. Your environment and your circumstances and people in your environment and circumstances can have an impression upon you. And Solomon understands that, and now he takes his son and he gives him some warning about three people. Be careful with whom you associate. Now, that doesn't mean that we're to stand off from other people. That doesn't mean we're to take the attitude that I'm better than everybody else. We aren't. There's a lot of press given to Christians, and they say, well, you know, you don't have anything to do with these people, and you hate these people, and you hate these people, and that simply isn't so. A Christian has no mandate to hate anybody. As a matter of fact, we're commanded to love our enemies. We're commanded to treat those who hate us well. We have no mandate to hate anybody. But we are commanded to stay away from certain influences that can affect us. You say, it doesn't make sense to me. Well, I'll give you an example that's in the newspapers today. I heard a little more about it today. Everybody's upset with the people that smoke and are destroying their health. But now you know what they're concerned with? They're concerned with secondhand smoke. You understand, just being in a room with a smoker can cost you your life. I read somewhere here in the last few days that a child brought up in a home where mom and dad smoke is like 5 times more likely to die of lung cancer than a child that is not raised in that environment. What are you saying? I'm saying things that we might not allow for can have an impression upon us. And as a result of that, I have to be cautious. How many times have we already discovered in the book of Proverbs that Solomon warns his son against this type of person and that type of person and stay away and steer clear of this individual? Why? Because it will affect your life. And so he warns him about three people that it's easy to get caught up with. What do you mean by that? I mean, we've got things in common with even people we don't like. If we were to sit down tonight and talk to someone who is in prison serving a life sentence, if we talked to them long enough, we probably would find some things that we have in common. That's the nature of humanity. We have things in common with other people. And if we're not careful and emphasize only the things we have in common, we can form a bond with something that may be detrimental to us. I've taught for years, if you work in an environment, I think I said it last week or sometime this week, if you work in an environment where people are using profanity open and often, you don't have to work there very long until all at once it's going to be popping up in your mind and probably popping out of your mouth. Do you ever find yourself saying something going, where did that come from? You say, how does it get in there? It gets in there because of the impressions that are given to us through the course of a day, a week, a month, or a year. And he warns about three individuals here. He says in verse number 1 of chapter 23, when thou sittest to eat with a ruler. And he's not talking about a yardstick or a, you know, something you measure with. When thou sittest to eat with a ruler. Some of us probably should eat with a ruler. One that you could put around your waist. When thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee, and put a knife to thy throat, if thou be a man given to appetite. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. The first person he warns his son about having an alliance or an association with, because it's so easy to get caught up with people that are in high position. Well, we say, well, you know, it doesn't mean anything to me. You know, I'm just a common, ordinary. We like to throw those things out. But the truth of the matter is, if we get around somebody who's really important, there's an aura about that person. There's a draw to that person. And we can refute it all day long and say, well, you know, I'm not a respecter of persons, but we're just becoming liars then, because we're all kind of caught up in that. And if we get around somebody that has a high position, somebody of importance, somebody of great importance in the community or wherever it might be, maybe in your vocational field, it is easy to be drawn to that person. Several years ago, I went through a little bit of training with the police chaplains, and part of that was training in what we at that time called post-shooting trauma. It's called PTSD for guys coming out of Iraq. It's the same malady, and when a police officer shoots his weapon or fires his weapon, there is a whole plethora of consequences, and one of the things they wanted to do was train the chaplains to sit down and defuse that situation, help this guy out. And work with him. So I'm in a room filled with people who all had the name, you know, as a chaplain. And how many of you know, boy, there's chaplains, there's a thousand different kinds and types. And I'm in a room full of people that don't even believe the Bible that I believe. They don't even believe in the God that I... But they're all chaplains. And all at once, because we were there in that room and the whole goings-on was about dealing with people that have been in traumatic situations and being a help to them, and you begin to communicate, you begin to talk, and all at once you find yourself being drawn close to people. You don't even know what they're all about. But in reality, as you move away from there, you realize these people are people that despise the very God that I preach about. They hate the very Bible that I read from. And yet somehow I was drawn. You say, well, that's a normal thing. And it is a normal thing. And I'm not saying we shouldn't associate in some measure with everybody. But I've got to be careful about allowing that to become impressionable in my life. It is easy for us to form friendships based on common situations. And if we're not careful, if we don't have a filter, as it were. How many of you realize when you make a friend, you get the good and you get the bad? A lot of people got married and they thought when they got married, all they were going to get was the good. And then 10 years later, they get a divorce because they got the bad as well. They say, whoa, where did that come from? It comes with the package. And when you make a friend, you may be able to say, boy, they're nice and you know, they just talk well. And especially if they're a person of position. I've told my stories, and I won't tell them tonight because of the lack of time, but I used to run around with a police chief quite a bit. I was the first chaplain to be given a badge in the city of Toledo in over 100 years. I still have badge 1. And that was quite an honor, but it came about because the police chief liked me.
And this was way back in the day. How many of you remember Marty Felker?
Way back in the day. And Marty came to our church and visited, he and his wife, and took a liking to our church and contact. Anyway, we found a friendship. But it was really nice on my part because he was really important. And being around him made me feel really important. I've talked about various functions we would go to, and when we would go in, boy, I'll tell you, police officers treat the chief of police just like military people treat a four-star general. And they would click their heels and salute, and yeah, I was right with him. And in a sense, they're saluting me, because me and the chief, you know, we're like that. We get along. It's easy to get caught up in that aura of position and to be drawn to somebody that has a great position. You know what he says? He says, listen, when you sit before a king, a ruler, you better be careful. Why? It's easy to get caught up in that. It's easy to get caught up in that, and it's easy to form an alliance with somebody you may not want to have an alliance with. One of the things that God commanded the kings of Israel to do when they became king was to sit down and write their own copy of the law. I'm convinced to this day we would be better off if every child that started to school had to sit down and write out by hand the first five books of Moses. I didn't get any amens at all, not even from the teens over here. You say, why? Because sometimes reading is important. I mentioned I read and listen at the same time when I go through my Bible in my morning devotions, and I plug an iPod in and I listen to Alexander Scorby read my Bible as I read along with him, and that enhances my reading. I get more out of it. But they tell us that what we write down is even more memorable. Can you imagine a king before he took the throne being commanded of God to sit down and write out longhand the five books of Moses? Why would God do that? Because he wanted him to know what was in them. And one of the things God told the king after he was anointed was not to form an alliance with other kings round about him. You know what God warned him about? He warned him about that influence of people in high position. We can be overwhelmed. We can be overwhelmed. We can be put in awe. And sometimes, you know, we become fearful. I know people that won't witness because they're afraid somebody might know more Bible than they know. I know people that are afraid to openly confront an evolutionist because they say, well, I just don't know. Do you understand that they don't know any more than you do? All they've done is they have a faith-based belief system. They have faith to believe that nobody did it, and you and I have faith to believe that God did it. That's the only difference. They all believe it got done. But the evolutionist doesn't have anywhere to put his faith, so he just throws it up in the air and says, there it is. And to be honest with you, it is not. So I said, well, I don't want to get caught up in the debate. It's not a debate at all. There are as many facts, and there is as much evidence, if not more, to prove a creationist viewpoint than there is an evolutionist viewpoint. The number of evolutionists is declining and has been for the last 5 years. Why? Because it doesn't add up. It doesn't add up. I think our teens are going through some information on Sunday morning, and one of the things they talk about there was the formation of the Grand Canyon and how, you know, it took place over millions and millions and millions and millions, all those, you know, given enough time, anything can happen. What was it you used to say? If you took 12 apes and put them in a room with typewriters, eventually they would type the works of William Shakespeare? It was one of the proofs of evolution when I was growing up. I like what Dr. Ruckman said. You put 12 apes in a room and give them typewriters and they'd tear them all apart and beat each other to death with a plenums. That's what they do. But truth of the matter. And yet you begin to examine the evidence, and if that were to happen, if that happened over millions and millions of years, then the Grand Canyon, the river that cut out the Grand Canyon, had to flow uphill for 7 miles. How many of you ever heard of water flowing uphill for 7 miles? That's the only way it could have happened. And it had to do it for millions and millions and millions and millions of years. Well, what are you saying, preacher? I'm saying there's as much evidence to support my position as there is an evolutionist. But if I'm not careful, I get caught up with their position. Well, this guy is he's a professor. This individual, boy, don't you know, they have letters behind their name.
Hey, if that irritates you, go get some letters. I have some letters behind my name. John said when I got my doctorate that it was kind of like putting a whipped cream on a pea on an onion. Wasn't that what it was called? You know what you said? It was like putting whipped cream on an onion. You know, I'm not the person you'd expect to have that degree. But you say, well, what does it do for you? Not much. They still charge me full price at Starbucks. And one of these days, I'm going to talk with them about that. I'm going to say, listen, you don't know who I am. I am high stature. And doesn't work. Doesn't matter. And yet you and I get caught up with people of high position. You know what he said there? He said, put a knife to your throat if you're somebody given to appetite. Why? Because you can get sucked in. He's got all these dainties to eat there. They'll pull you in and they'll cause you to form an alliance that could be damaging to you. Don't get overwhelmed with people because of their high position. You know what you'll realize? The President of the United States, the kings of the world need Jesus Christ as much as the homeless guy living down underneath the overpass. And without Christ, they'll burn in a Christless eternity for all of eternity. They need the gospel. And yet, if we're not careful, we get overwhelmed with the height of their position and we shut our mouths. He's warning his son, listen, don't get caught up in that. Don't get caught up in that. See everybody, look them square in the eye and recognize, but for the grace of God, I'd be on my way to hell. And if it's not for the grace of God, that's where you're going to, and I need to tell you about Jesus Christ. He said, don't get caught up with people of position here. Be cautious. Look down at verse 19 and watch him come through it again. Hear thou, my son, and be wise and guide thine heart in the way. Be not among winebibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh, for the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and the drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. Hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old. You know what? It's easy to forsake the advice of parents and put that same confidence in those that have high position. He said, be careful. Be careful about putting your faith and trust. Today we are a generation, especially Americans, that we go to the bookstore. Barnes & Noble has done more to corrupt us. Why? Because there's so much available. You can read any subject you want to read, every position written about that subject. And so people simply go there to fuel their preconceived notions. I'm right. I need a book that tells me I'm right. And the people are obliging, so I got just the book for you. Here's a book that prove you're right. You go home, you read the book, and all at once, you know what you've done? You've been drawn into that thing. Well, this guy he's an important person. He's written books. And basically, people who write books are people who write books and don't do anything else for a living. He's making money. Okay, can I tell you why books are written? They're written to make an income. And it doesn't matter what the position is, on both sides, people write books because they want to make an income. Next time you sit down to read, keep that in mind. This guy wrote this so I would buy the book. Sucker. I bought the book. Nothing wrong with reading, but be cautious about getting caught up in that stuff. The Bible says that great men are not always wise. Great men are not always wise. Just because a guy has letters after his name, and just because he has a high and lofty position, just because he commands the respect of hundreds or thousands of people, doesn't mean he's got it right. Be cautious, because we're impressionable. Notice, secondly, he talks about getting caught up with prosperity. Labor not to be rich. We covered this last week. We talked about that desire within us. Do you know what? We're drawn to people with lots of money. Oh, you say, no, not me. Don't give me that stuff. You'd rather ride an Lexus or a Mercedes as you had a Volkswagen. Amen. I mean, when's the last time you went in and told your wife, fellas, or went in and told your husband, gals, that, hey, guess what I did today? I rode around today in a rusted out Chevrolet. No. But I'll bet if you rode in a Mercedes SEL 500, you probably went home and told your wife, guess what I did today? Why? Somehow that's intriguing. Somehow we're drawn to that. We're drawn to prosperity. We like being around people. Oh, you say, I wouldn't want a big house. You're a liar. Oh, no, I wouldn't want... Listen, if it were left up to you, if it were left up to me, we'd have 25,000 square feet and 15 servants to take care of it all day long and still be complaining because it wouldn't be big enough. I would like to get one to put my shooting range in, you know, or something else. There's always something more that we desire. There's a gravitational pull to that stuff. My wife took me the other day, and we went out to, what's the name of the mansion over here? Stranahan's Mansion. I've been in Toledo 30-something years, my first trip. I don't have to go back. Yeah. I went over and saw how the Stranahan family lived. I'll be honest with you, I could go for a house that big. Just me and my wife. I mean, you might have to hunt for each other for days. You never know. You know, sweetheart, where are you? You know, that kind of thing. But, listen, you say, no, not me. Just give me a... I hear these people say, give me a cabin in the corner of Glory Land. You ever hear that? Just give me a cabin when I get to heaven. You know, you understand how loud they would squawk if that's all they got? I think the Lord ought to just do that just to show, you know, well, that's what you asked for. It's what you prayed for. You got this, you know, this guy gets a mansion over here, and this guy gets the Taj Mahal here, and you got, see a little cabin over there? It looks a little bit like an outhouse behind that other one there. That's what you wanted. No, we're drawn to prosperity. We like being around people that are prosperous financially. And yet we got to be careful. Why? Because money doesn't last. We'll convince ourselves that it does. The most miserable people in all of the world are people with money. That's a statistical fact. If you look at all the various cross sections and do all the analysis you want to do, you'll come up with the idea, the truth of the matter is that people who have the most are the most unhappy. Why? Because it doesn't bring happiness. They spend all their time trying to keep it. You know what they learn? The more they get, the higher and quicker it flies. Where'd it go? It's gone. It's gone. We were looking, somebody mentioned it to me the other day, we happened to be watching the same program on, how odd is that, watching the same television program. We were watching these big yachts, you know. These guys build, you know, $50-60 million yachts. Costs $1 million just to operate it for 2 weeks. $1 million just to operate it. You say, oh, I wouldn't want... Don't tell me that. You'd love to have one. So would I. And that's why I've got to be careful. You see, I can get drawn into something I'm not supposed to. Solomon understood in all of his wisdom that we, if we're not cautious, can be drawn into circumstances and situations we don't want to be in. How many of you have at least one place in your life where you said, if I'd have known going in what I was getting into, I wouldn't have gone there, wouldn't have done that? Sure you have. Sure. But you see, we get drawn into it. We're like the moth drawn to the flame. And so Solomon is attempting to tell his son, just because a guy has high position, treat him with respect, yes, but don't get drawn into that. Just because a guy has prosperity, just because he's got oodles and oodles of money, don't get drawn into that. Why? Because none of those things afford lasting values. Then he talks about getting caught up with the perversive. Look at verse number 6. Eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. Notice, they've all got that enticing thing about them. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, he saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. The morsel which thou hast eaten shalt thou vomit up and lose thy sweet words. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. Remove not the old landmark and enter into the fields, nor enter not into the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is mighty. He shall plead their cause with thee. He talks about the perversive. We have an idea, we talk about a pervert, and we think about that in an immoral context or a sexual context, and that's not the true definition of the word. Someone who is perversive is someone that constantly seeks to change things, to alter it. They've always got a better opinion. We would call them a critic. Do you ever meet somebody who is critical? You say, well, you know, here's what I did. And they say, well, yeah, but you could have done this and done this and done. That's perversive. They're trying to change it. We live in a world today that is given to change. Proverbs 24, verse 21. Look at this over here in the next chapter. Proverbs 24, verse 21 says, my son, fear thou the Lord and the king, and meddle not with them that are given to change. That's that perversive individual. That's that individual that's got an evil eye. They can always see something wrong in whatever it is. They're always wanting to do it different, do it better. I've got a better idea. It's easy to get drawn into that. You know why? Because we get bored with the things that are monotonous. And as a result, somebody comes on and says, I've got a great idea. What is it? I'm in. We don't even know what it is, but we're in because it's different. We're attracted to the different. And all at once, we're drawn to those that are perversive if we're not cautious. Adam Clark talked about these people in chapter 24, verse 21, that are given to change. And he says they're called changelings, the innovators who are always for making experiments on modes of government, forms of religion, etc. And he concludes it is the most dangerous spirit that can infect the human mind. Absalom is the great example. Absalom, as the people came in and out of the city of Jerusalem to see the glory of King David, he said, oh, that I were king. I'd do it different. I'd change it if I were in there. Oh, it wouldn't be the same. No, sir, I would. He goes on and he says, remove not the ancient landmarks. Young people, listen to me. One of the things you need to learn and set in your life, don't change things too fast. Don't change things too fast. Why? Because it's easy to look at something that may be faltering and say, oh, that's it, it's a lost cause, let's do something different. And it may just need a little time to get things straightened out. We've looked at some of the draggings, I would say, of capitalism. And if we're not careful, we're about to abandon it for something that has never produced anything of value. Oh, but we want to change. We're given to change. The changelings, Adam Clark said, the most dangerous spirit that a man can have. Be cautious. Somebody that's always tearing things down. And, well, I don't think we'll do it this way. I don't know why they're going to do it that way. I think this would be a better idea. That very person, if you're not careful, can have a detrimental effect in your life. He said, be cautious about that individual. Brown called them the society of restless persons. You ever know somebody like that? The society of restless persons. Notice, he didn't say, meddle not with those who change. It's okay to change. Sometimes change is good. But he said, meddle not with those who are given to change. They just always want to change. Doesn't matter what it is. Let's change it. Let's do it better. Let's do it different. The entire premise of socialism and communism is built upon constant change. We preached about that, taught about that in Sunday school several weeks ago. You've got the hypothesis and the antithesis and the synthesis, and it goes on and on and on with every rebellion. When the proletariat rises, the bourgeois, and all of that stuff goes on and on, and each time, supposedly, it gets better. And so a person of that mindset is constantly looking for change. Let's change it. Let's change. Rebellion. Revolt. We need to fix it. Let's go deeper. Let's go further. Let's go wider. Let's do it different. Stay away from people like that. My grandmother lived in the same house all the years that I knew her. As a matter of fact, she lived there 20 years before I was ever born. Lived in the same house. Didn't have heat in it. It was in northern Florida. It had a propane thing came through the wall and a little furnace there. They lit on real cold days, but she would tell you, I'm only going to let it run for a couple hours. Because she didn't want to run out of propane. And she'd always tell you, don't stand too close because you'll catch on fire. Nobody ever did, but she knew that you would. My grandmother was what most people would call an ignorant, uneducated woman. When she got a new refrigerator that made ice for the first time in her life, we went to visit her, and when we got there, we got out of the car and walked around to the back door, and the backyard just covered in ice cubes. And my father went into the house. He said, Mama, what in the world are you doing? She said, I don't know how to turn that thing off. It just keeps making ice. She thought it was going to fill up the whole refrigerator if she didn't get rid of it. So about every 2 hours, she'd open it, get out the ice tray, and throw it out so she'd have more room because it just constantly was making ice. You say, poor ignorant woman. I find myself longing for that lifestyle. I find myself longing for that lifestyle. I remember just little boys, grandkids running around and asking Mama. She had one car that she bought evidently when we were little, and we fought over, four grandchildren fought over it all the time. Whoever got that car was the hero of the day. And, I mean, that was it. We went out and we dug holes in the sand and we played with that car and sat on the porch and chased each other with sticks. We didn't have Nintendo and all the stuff that goes on today, but I long for those days. Young people, it's not just the old people that talk about the good old days. You're going to long for the good old days one of these days. Be cautious about getting caught up in forming alliances with people that are just constantly in motion, who always want to burn the bridges so they can build new ones, so they can burn them and then build new ones. Because if you're not careful, you'll find yourself a long way from your principles with no way to get back someday. He warns his son, be cautious, be cautious. Be cautious with those that you associate and form alliances. Don't get close to those, and don't form alliances solely because someone has a high position. I didn't tell you not to make a friendship. If God brings a king or whoever into your life and a friendship can be developed, then develop it. It's not a problem. But don't get sucked into that where you're accepting the bad simply because they've got a high position. Well, you know, I don't like the way they talk, or I don't like the things that they do, and you know, I don't believe in going where they go or being part of what they... But you know, they're pretty high up, and it's good for my career. Yeah, but it's bad for your life. It's bad for your life. Oh, it's a good step. They'll be able to help me. Yeah, but they'll harm you too. Be cautious about being drawn to people of high position. Prosperity. Boy, I would like to have 8 or 10 millionaires for friends. If you know anybody looking for friends, let me know. You know, I'm not into all the internet dating, but if I could find an internet site where millionaires were looking for friends, I'd sign up for that one. I'd want to get my, you know, whatever it is on there so they could look and see what a good potential I would be, and we'd just be buddies. Amen? But you better be careful about putting up with things that are wrong and evil and sinful just because they've got money. Well, you know, but I might get some. Yeah, but it didn't buy them happiness. It didn't change their life. And it's not going to do you any good either. It's not going to do you a bit of good either. Be careful about just building relationships on a high position or on prosperity or on a perversive nature. Yeah, we all get bored. We all get bored. We look around our house. We say, I've lived here 5 years. It's time to move. You know, oh, I've had this car now for 5 years. It's paid for. It's time to go out and borrow money and buy another one. We are people who are not content. And that, listen, has a detrimental effect. Because before long, it's not just a house or a car or a job. Before long, it's another place in the country, and it's another city, and it's another wife or another husband, and it's another, and right down the road we go. Just that discontented lifestyle. And happiness is never what we have. It's always what's right around the corner. We put our little pith helmet on and we get our little safari shorts and shirt on and we grab our butterfly net and we go looking for happiness. And we traipse all over the world and there it is, and just about the time we get it in our net, it's nothing. Listen to me, there are people in this room tonight that can amen what I'm saying because they spent the greater part of their life looking for something that didn't exist. Let me give you an old adage. You never know what you've got till it's gone. Can I tell you why that's an old adage? Because to millions and millions of people, over and over and over again, it proved to be true in their life. And because it was true to millions and millions of people over and over and over again in their life, it will be true in your life too. And that is, you will never know what you've got until it's gone. Unless you listen to what a wise man said to his son. And he said, hey, don't meddle with those that are given to change. Change, yes, if it's necessary. Change, yes, if it has to be. But change slowly. Change reluctantly. Why? Because when it's gone, only then you'll long for it and wish you had it back again. warning his son. Notice how he ends up down at the bottom of this. He says in verse 23, let's read verse 22, "Hearken unto thy father that begat thee, and despise not thy mother when she is old." One of the first things that goes in a society that's decaying is its respect for its elders, and we are there as America. We are there as America. But then he says this, "Buy the truth and sell it not." Put a premium. Prize God's Word in your life. Nothing wrong with going to Barnes & Noble, but look in here first for the answer. You say, why? Because the guy that wrote this wasn't looking to make a profit. The guy that wrote this book was trying to help you. Look here first. Buy the truth and sell it not. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous, watch this, shall greatly rejoice. You know what Solomon wants? He wants to raise a child that will be prosperous and productive and wise and great, but love God and wisdom. And in that sense, will make him a happy man that he raised his child. Somebody said, well, when they get to be 18, you push them out the door and it's all over with. And that's true in some circumstances, but I got news for you. That kid at 35 and 40 can break your heart. That kid at 50 can break your heart. And every parent wants to raise a child that will cause them to rejoice. Look at verse 15. "My son, if thine heart be wise, my heart shall rejoice, even mine. Yea, my reins shall rejoice when thy lips speak right things." Solomon said, I want you to be that kind of son that will make me happy, but not just so you can make me happy, but I'll be happy when you've discovered happiness and you haven't been sucked into all of this stuff that's just facade and lies. "Thy father and thy mother," verse 25, "shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice." He's looking for a son who probably is pretty young here. Maybe somewhere between 15 and 25. A son that has been raised with a silver spoon in his mouth because he is of royal lineage. A son who will take the throne of the richest empire of his day. The Bible said in the time of Solomon, silver was counted as stones in the street. And that's going to be his. And you know what Solomon is worried about? That it'll ruin him. That he has worked and labored so hard to build an empire, and that when he turns it over to his son, it will ruin him. Oh, you say, I don't believe that. Read the book of Ecclesiastes. And listen to the old king. With just a few miles left to go. And hear him talk about how I was the wisest man that ever lived. I had riches. He said there was nothing my hand could do that I didn't do. I could do anything I wanted. And then listen to him sum up his life. Vanity of vanity. All is vanity, saith the preacher. You know what he's worried about here? He's worried about his son being just like him. Young people, if you have parents that love you, listen to what they have to say. I'm going to tell you something about your parents right now. If they love you, and if they love the Lord, listen carefully. They don't want you to have the same life they had. When they pray for you, they don't say, God, give them the life I've had all my life. Every godly mom and dad that has children pray, God, give them much better than I've ever had. Their desire for you is not to have equal to what they've had, not to have the same. They want you to have more by far than they've ever had in their life. And listen to me, there's nobody else in life going to treat you that way. Nobody else in life going to treat you that way. One of the first steps in wisdom is the fear of the Lord. And with the fear of the Lord comes the respect for parental advice. You say, well, my mom and dad are sticks in the mud. What that means is they're not given to change. They change very slow. Why? Because they've seen the devastating results of just flitting about life, grabbing for one thing after another. And they found that in stability there's happiness. You say, well, you know, they want me just to be poor like they are. No. They've learned through having and not having that it's not the money or the monetary means that provides happiness. They want better for you. Solomon wanted better for his son. So he warned him about three people. It's easy to get drawn into them because it's impressive. It's impressive to sit down and talk to someone who is of high position in life. To talk with someone and be able to say, boy, listen, I've talked to that person. We go to get autographs of Hollywood movie stars. Why? Because it's impressive. It's impressive. But listen, don't get sucked in. Just because they have high position doesn't mean they're happy, nor does it mean they can provide you with happiness. Position, prosperity, and perversiveness. Be careful. Be careful.